So, you know, it was 13 years ago this week that we began this group. We began sitting together at All Faith Chapel at Vanderbilt Divinity School. And it was literally where two or three were gathered. There were just a handful of us. So, welcome to the old timers who've been with us for a long time. You know who you are. And if you're new, welcome. And just a word about our practice. You could think of this practice as having two different manifestations. One is what we might call the progressive path, and the other is what we might call the direct path. The progressive path is probably what most of us think of as meditation or mindfulness practice. It's sitting or yoga or qigong, eating meditation, saying mantras, saying the rosary. These are all progressive path practices. Direct path practices, by contrast, are practices that point to what the Tibetans call the nature of mind or the essence of mind. The Buddha says in a lovely phrase, he says, "O ye of noble birth, O nobly born, remember your radiant true nature, the essence of mind. Trust it. Return to it. It is home." So here in our practice together, we try to work both sides of the street, as it were, both the progressive path practices and the direct path practices. The title of the talk tonight is Allowing and Offering. I was talking with someone who asked me a question I'd never been asked before. He said, "Could you talk about the difference between routine and ritual?" And he said that where his question was coming from was that he found himself in a season in his life where he just felt the plates were just spinning. You know, the jugglers who would juggle plates on a stick. If you're old enough, you remember the Ed Sullivan Show, where you'd have the Beatles one time, and then you had these jugglers who were juggling plates on a stick. That was what passed for entertainment in those days. And he said he felt like his life was just, he was just juggling one thing after another. And he was really interested in ritual practices, or what we might call progressive path practices. He said, "You know, I know there are like rituals in the Episcopal Church, and there are a lot of rituals in Catholic Church." He said, "Talk to me about routine and ritual." So I let that question sit for a little bit, and then I said, "Well, you know, I think of routine as something like automatic pilot. You know, we're just sort of doing it in a very just reflex sort of way. It's just, you know, we know the way to drive to work. We can kind of get there without thinking about it, or we know how to load the dishwasher or make the bed. And we can do things in kind of a routine sort of way. Another synonym for routine is mindless. You know, you just don't really have to pay attention. And, you know, it's good that we can do some things mindlessly. You know, it's actually good. You know, we need to be able to do some things just kind of automatically without thinking about it. Ritual, by contrast, and I'm not speaking just about religious ritual here. You know, we have a kind of ritual here. We do this quiet sitting, and then I give a talk, and then we end with loving kindness meditation, and we ring the bell. You know, there's a sort of, if you will, a religious ritual here. But I think ritual, in whatever form, whether it's in a sacred space like this, or just out walking in the woods, it has to do with presence. It has to do with actually showing up for our experience. So, you know, religious rituals might be really quite routine. You know, you can celebrate communion, you can celebrate the Eucharist in a really mindless, sort of automatic kind of way. I'm sure some of us have been to these services where, you know, it just feels like, well, you know, here we go, we're saying the Nicene Creed again, and, you know, we're just kind of checking the boxes. But real ritual has this quality of intimacy and really knowing our experience. So it may be that as I'm making up the bed, I really feel the coolness or the warmth of the covers as I'm smoothing them out. And I've shown up for that. And there's a kind of intimacy to the moment. You know, in Thich Nhat Hanh's community, Plum Village in the south of France, he said the first thing that they did with young monks was not to teach them how to meditate. He said, we taught them how to close the door mindfully. You know, when the young monks would show up, you know, they were just kind of doing it in the routine kind of way, you know, just wham, bang. You know, and he said, no, actually, there's a different way to be with this routine activity of closing the door. It can actually be a ritual activity. So ritual's about knowing our experience intimately. And that means a embodied awareness of the experience. It's not just all up in the coconut. We actually know, oh, this moment is like this. The warmth of the coolness of the water on my hands as I'm just cleaning the dishes, putting them in the dishwasher. Oh, this moment's like this. That's mindfulness. As opposed to, let's just get on with this and get on to the next. There's a sports psychologist named Jim Lehrer, and he did studies of world-class athletes. And one of the things that he noticed, and he was looking at professional tennis players, and then one of the things that he noticed was that really the top line of tennis players had what he called rituals of recovery. And that was between points. They had these things that they did to sort of reset their body and their mind. They might be looking at their rackets and looking as though they were sort of counting the strings almost. Or they might do this kind of ritual rocking back and forth, just getting into their stance. And they put heart rate monitors on these folks, and they found that they had like 25% lower heart rates than the folks who didn't have these rituals of recovery. And Lehrer said that the human body is so wired that we need some kind of ritual of recovery about every 90 minutes or so. You know, so if we're in a meeting, you know, those interminable 3-hour meetings, really not much happens. It's at least my experience. We really need to kind of unplug, and whether it's walk around the building or have a healthy snack or whatever it might be, to enter into what Tara Brach would call the sacred pause. It's this pause where we actually get to kind of reset and show up for our experience, moving out of automatic pilot and into something that's more intimate. You know, mindfulness practice is in the service of making everyday ordinary experiences convey this sense of intimacy, this presence, capital P presence. But you know, even mindfulness practices can become routine. Have you ever had the experience of your practice getting sort of dry as dust? It happens. It really does. So just because we're doing something mindfully doesn't mean that it's necessarily got any. Sogne Rinpoche, the Tibetan teacher, calls it juice. He says, is there any juice in the practice? And whatever we're doing in our lives, you know, whether it's working or parenting, caring for aging parents, whatever it might be, what's the quality of the presence here? Is there juice? Is there intimacy? Or in some ways are we kind of turning the crank? So, how to do even routine things in an intimate sort of way. And here's where I want to use these two words of allowing and offering. We can notice that we're on automatic pilot. We're just, you know, doing it. We're just getting stuff done. But when we step back and notice that and realize, oh, this is routine, and we're not trying to make it non-routine or really have a lot of juice, really ritually sweet. We just notice, here's routine, and we just allow it to be that way. We're not trying to change it, you know. We're not trying to shift into the ritual gear. We're actually just noticing without any judgment at all, and this is mindfulness, just noticing, doing something in a routine way is sort of like this. And then we can offer this relatively mindless, routinized kind of way of doing it, we can offer that into this, I'll call it for right now, larger awareness. I'm going to unpack this in just a minute. But for right now, I want to just talk about offering something into a larger awareness. And I have an image for this. Do you know this ritual? You see it in Hindu cultures and Buddhist cultures where they'll come out to a waterside, a lake or a river, and they'll have these little candles that are in these paper boats. You seen these? And they'll light these candles and they'll just send these little boats with their candles out onto the water at night. You'll see hundreds, thousands of these little candles that are just floating on the water. That's the image I have, the quality of this offering of whatever our experience is. And this can be dark stuff too, you know, hard stuff, difficult stuff. We can notice awareness is allowing this. It's just in my awareness right now. I don't have any choice about it. Awareness is allowing it. And then I can offer it into this vast, larger space of awareness. When Buddhists talk about emptiness, this is what they're talking about. They're not talking about some special experience. They're talking about ordinary, garden variety awareness, which makes no discrimination about any thought, any feeling, any sensation, any perception of the world. It's simply welcoming of all of our experience. And in that sense, this emptiness is very full. It's full of everything. Nothing's excluded. So that was the first person I was talking to who asked this question about ritual and routine. Anything can become a ritual, an opening to, we could call it presence, we could call it capital S, spirit, the divine. Anything can be an opening. Any moment can be an opening to the divine, even what we might think of as not very divine moments. So the second person I was talking with, he said, I've got something that is just really got me and will not let go of me. He said, I just have this energy. I just want to be really special. I want to be outstanding in a visible way. And he says, you know, I think I shouldn't be thinking this. I shouldn't be feeling this way. But he said, it's just got me. You know, I just want to be noticed. And I want to be noticed for doing it really well, whatever it is that I'm doing. I just want to be appreciated for doing it really well. And he asked me if I had any thoughts about this. First thing I said was, I know this territory. This is so human. Just wanting to be appreciated. I like to say to my couples in marital therapy, appreciation is the lifeblood of a relationship. If we're not being appreciated out loud and on a somewhat regular basis, it's like there's occult bleeding that's going on in the relationship. Appreciation is really important. Children need to be seen and heard and appreciated. And we don't ever outgrow that. So there's nothing wrong with our desire to be appreciated. I said, let's work with this meditatively a little bit. So we just, you know, do what we do here at night. We just sort of drop down into the support of the chair, resting down on earth, earth element of the body, resting down on the support of the earth. And then resting back in the wind element, resting back in the breathing, the cradle of the breath. And then just noticing that here in awareness, in the great field space of awareness, here's this wish to shine brightly. And to be seen, celebrated, recognized for shining brightly. And we got curious together about what's the embodied sense of this wish, this seeking appreciation. Another name for it is love. Seeking this love from someone else. What's the felt sense of this? Where does this seeking, this longing live in the body? You can check this out for yourself. Or maybe the despair that this is just not on order, it's just not available. The sorrow. Notice what the felt sense of that is as well. And then we take this backward step. This is direct path practice. We take this backward step into the witness, capital W witness, the awareness. And we just notice, oh, here's this content in consciousness. Here is this longing to be seen and appreciated. And the witness is space-like. It's like the space of this room. It absolutely allows this. There's no critique of it. Doesn't see it as, you know, the narcissist in front of the room. Some egoic problem. It just accepts it. And we step back and we notice, oh, it's like this in the body, this longing. It's like this in the body. And this is all in the service of allowing. It's such a gift, it's such a relief to have whatever is here allowed. Not to be in contention with it. Or if we are in contention with it, to let that be allowed too. What a relief. But then after this stepping back move, then we want to step back in to the longing itself. And the image I like to use is this. It's the image of a sugar cube. And let's say this sugar cube stands for our wish, our longing, our seeking. And we're just going to drop this into a glass of warm water. And what happens, of course, is that the sugar dissolves in the water. It's not trying to dissolve. The water's not trying to dissolve it. It's just allowed to go its own way. It's just held, welcomed by the water. And this is what open, pure awareness does. It takes any content, and when we offer it into this welcoming space, we could say this loving space of pure awareness, there is a kind of dissolution that happens. We're not trying to solve anything. It dissolves. So take your wish to be seen, to be recognized, to be celebrated, to be loved. And just the way you'd like to be loved. Take that and offer it into this boundless, compassionate space of pure awareness. And just let it drop into that. And see what happens in your body when you make this move of allowing and offering. Let's see what's true for you. So if your eyes have been closed, you can gently open them. Carl Jung, the great Swiss psychiatrist, said something interesting about this. He said, you know, some problems can be solved. I had some computer problems this weekend, and I am just not naturally gifted at solving this kind of problem. But I know there's somebody out there who can solve this. There's some problems we need a solution for, right? But Jung said that there are problems that can be solved, and there are some that can only be dissolved. You know, sometimes we'll have a problem, like, say, a conflict in a relationship, and we'll hope we can find some resolution, some resolving of it. But some things, and maybe some of the big things, don't have such an easy solution or resolution. They have to be dissolved in a larger space, a different frame. Try a little attentional experiment with me. So if you close your eyes again, and just be aware of the skin on your face. And then being aware of the space around your face, the space in which your face is, your inside self and the outside world. That's the way we say it. So feeling into the sensations, the skin, the face, and then feeling into the air around you, the space, its temperature. And we have visual images of our face and the shape of our face. But if you just go to raw experience and go to the interface between the skin of your face and the space surrounding it, the air surrounding it, notice that you can't really distinguish right at that point of contact which is which. Right at that point, there's a kind of interbeing. And the sense that we have of being an inside person walking around in an outside world, it really, for a moment, dissolves. So if you let your eyes gently come open again. So the Buddha called this sense of an inside person walking around in an outside world, which is our usual consciousness, right? It's the usual way we kind of think of this thing. He called it ignorance. And he was not using that word in a pejorative way. This image of the sugar cube dissolving in the water, this is not my image. And the language of allowing and offering, it's not my... These are not my words either. They're Rupert Spira's words, this British teacher I've been referring to for a little bit. And I want to read you just a little piece from Rupert Spira. This is from his book, The Art of Peace and Happiness. If you want peace and happiness this year, you can read The Art of Peace and Happiness. So here's what he says. He says, let's begin with three basic possibilities of what we are. One, the mind and the body. Two, the witness of things. And three, awareness or presence. Capital A, awareness. Capital P, presence. Each of these possible stances for ourself has a corresponding view of the world. The first could be called a position of ignorance. The term ignorance is not meant in a judgmental or pejorative sense, but rather in a factual one. It is a position in which our true nature is ignored, and as a result, we mistakenly believe and feel ourselves to be a mind and body. That's all we are, just a mind and a body. The second could be called a position of wisdom or understanding, in which it's clear that we are the awareness, capital A, in which or to which all objects, body, mind, and world appear. Your body, your thoughts, feelings, sensations, perceptions are in awareness itself. But the third could be called a position of love, in which it's clear that there are no objects, no selves, no others in the world, but rather a seamless intimacy of pure experiencing whose substance is presence, consciousness, or awareness. When we did this little experiment with the skin of the face, I wanted to invite you into the experience of this seamless intimacy. Sometimes in our meditations in here, we'll say, feel into the space in your body. and feel into the space around you. And feel them as one space interpenetrating. I have up here with me this little statue. If you're further back, it's hard to see this. But it's a statue of one of the meditational deities of Tibetan Buddhism named Manjushri. And Manjushri is a bodhisattva of discriminating wisdom. If you're up close, you can see he's got a sword. And what he wants to do is to cut through our ignorance. Cut through this sense that there is just this inside self and an outside world. To cut through this ignorance and come into the wisdom first of the witness, that literally everything that we know is in our awareness. The Andromeda galaxy is in your awareness, as is the piano up here. Right? And actually, because they're both in awareness, although we think of these as light years distance, right? It's a long way from the Andromeda galaxy to the piano. Actually, in awareness, there's no distance at all. They're both right there, right here, right now. That's true of space, but it's also true of time. So you may think of the future and think of the past, but where are they in awareness? They're in the eternal now. You know, the theologians talk about the difference between chronos, clock time, that's past, present, and future. Those are just thoughts in the mind. And kairos, which is this inbreaking of the eternal now. So to return to where we began, when we step back, when we make this wisdom stepping back into the witness, we step back into this vast, empty spaciousness that's holding all things and judging nothing. When we drop whatever our experience is, it might be routine experience, it might be really special experience, non-ordinary experience. When we drop this into the water, the space, as it were, of pure awareness, my experience of this, and you got to check it out for yourself. The Buddha said, don't believe anything just because I said it to you. Check it out for yourself. That's what distinguishes Buddhism from all these believing religions. It's very experiential. It's very pragmatic. But if you drop whatever contents there are in your mind into this compassionate awareness, see if you don't drop into the field of love. So to go back to our longing to be seen, to be special, to maybe stand out from the herd. If we step back and witness that, let that be in this great space, and then offer it. That's the word. It's like an offering. We offer it into this loving space. Notice what happens for you. Notice if that sense of separation of me as an inside person and an outside world, if that doesn't soften a bit. There was something else I wanted to say, but for the life of me, I cannot remember it. So that seems like a good place to stop. So that's it for a minute. So resting down into the support of your seat, let yourself be held. our mother, the earth, supporting this sanctuary, this place of ritual. Sanctuary supporting our bodies. And the wind element, the breath, keeping it all alive. One breath to the next. It's our ritual to end with loving kindness, metta practice. So just feeling into the space around you, into the energy of our whole company. And you might even like to feel into the invisible forms, the invisible presences that are with us. And to each and every presence around you, saying to them, may you be free from fear. May you be free of obsession. May you dwell in peace. May you rest, may you dissolve into love. And imagine it so, imagine that for all these beings surrounding you, that your wishes for them are coming to pass. Free from fear, free from obsession, dwelling in peace, resting down into love. May it be so. Imagine it so. And then these same wishes rippling back to you. May you be free from fear. May I be free from obsession. May I dwell in peace. May you rest in love. And again, imagine it so in every cell of your body. Lighting up your DNA. Whole energy field of loving kindness. Dissolving into it. So feel the space outside your body and the space inside. And let them be what they are, one space interpenetrating. So we send these same wishes to our dear ones, our families, our friends, our teachers, those who have helped us along the path in our life. Strangers, refugees, immigrants, prisoners, those in any need or trouble. And to difficult persons. Persons who trouble us. Scare us, disturb us. They too want to be free from suffering and to be happy. And sending these wishes their way as well. May all beings be free from fear. May all beings be free from obsession. May all beings dwell in peace. May all beings rest in love. We dedicate the merit of our practice this evening to the welfare of all beings, to the arising of joy and happiness, and to the ending of suffering. So, a couple of announcements. On Wednesday, February 1st, the first Wednesday in February, obviously, we will not meet that evening. I'll be away teaching the Centering Prayer Retreat at St. Mary's that week. And I asked my good buddy and teaching colleague, Paloma Kane, if she might be able to stand in for me. But she wasn't able to, so I think we're just going to take that night off. So, if you'll just kind of put that in your mind. The Sunday afternoon meditation group that meets at my house, number 10 Peach Blossom Square, 5 p.m., everybody's welcome. The small Dharma group that meets at Bellevue Library will meet there on the 18th at 10:30 in the morning. I think that's everything. Thank you for your kind attention and for your generosity in the baskets in the back and the support button online. Thank you so much. Have a great week.